Well, welcome to the Voices of Courage show today. It's so good to have you here with me. And today we are going to be talking about the courage to journey from combat to compassion. And today we're talking about the combating of addiction. Okay, we're going to be talking about addiction today. You know, I do these shows now and then about addiction because it's such an important issue in our country today. As of 2023, approximately 48.5 million Americans and age 12 or older were living with substance use disorder, SUD, encompassing both alcohol and drugs. So we've got alcohol use disorder about 28.9 million and drug use disorder about 27.2 million. That's a lot of people out there. There's a lot of people that are going through a lot of challenges with addiction, and so that's why I bring it to this show, and we put it on the main stage here so that you can pass it on to your family and friends that might have challenges right now. There's a stigma, still out there. If you a person that is addicted right now, there's a stigma out there that's a little shame goes with that, and people are don't necessarily they think they can do it on their own, and they can't. Okay, most of the time these addictions are very difficult to break, and you need professional care and support to be able to go through that. So if you can let go of the thinking that you can do it on your own, if you let that go, you probably tried a few times, right? If you're addicted, and maybe family or friends that are addicted right now, they probably tried a few times. They may have told you or not, but it's very difficult to overcome addictions. Why? Because it's an obsession with the mind, and it's a physical craving of the body, and that. Together makes it very, very difficult to get off of these drugs. So I'm hoping that this is the show that's going to really help you to shift your thinking, shift your mentality, get the help you need if you're in a place or you have family or friends that are in a place that they need some help. This is the show that's going to give you the information you need to be able to do that. So I'm going to come right back with my guest. And we are going to talk about addiction and how to break free, how to liberate yourself from being a slave to alcohol or drugs. We'll be right back.
Whether because of discomfort, lack of mobility, your lifestyle, or occupation, you sit inactively way too many hours a day. Introducing Ellipse, the premium quality automatic seated exerciser that strengthens legs, increases mobility, and boosts circulation without physical strain or impact.
It is so quiet that none of my coworkers even know I'm using it.
Strengthen and tone your legs, increase your mobility, flexibility, and balance, plus stimulate healthy circulation.
My joints feel better, my knees feel better, my back feels better. It makes me feel stronger too.
Perfect for home therapy. Whisper quiet to use while you work.
My circulation is moving, I'm burning calories, and it makes me feel energetic.
Call now and order Ellipse, the seated exerciser that strengthens legs, increases mobility, and boosts circulation. Call and get upgraded to the deluxe bundle. Get the faster motor for 5 miles of steps per hour, the step counter, the sport mat, and wireless remote. Call now.
Well, welcome back, everybody. This is your host, Kennedy Foster. I'm so happy to have you with us today, Nick. For those of you that don't know, Nick Podlo, how do you say your last name?
Madlow, you got it. Close enough.
Okay, I got it. Yeah. Anyway, first of all, welcome to the show. It's great to have you.
Thank you. Yeah, good to be here.
Yeah. For those of you that don't know Nick, he is the founder and CEO of Sophros Recovery and Addiction Treatment Facility. He's also an Army veteran. Nick was inspired to create Sophros Recovery after his own struggle with addiction. Nick provides a powerful and transformative perspective drawn from his extensive background in the military, his personal battle with addiction, and his incredible journey to recovery. Nick, recovery is not easy for a lot of people. How did you, first of all, what was your drug of choice? What took you
down? Alcohol was my drug of choice. But I also used drugs as well. I just, they were easier to kick than the alcohol.
Yeah. Yeah. They were easier to kick than the alcohol. A lot of people think that that's the opposite. Drugs might be easier to kick than, you know, the alcohol might be easier to kick than the drugs. Is that pretty true across for all people or what?
Yeah, I mean, we talk about I don't want to minimize, you know, drug addiction. This is just, you know, from my experience. Yeah. But one of the challenges that we find with drugs, at least for me, it was easy to change the people, places, and things in my life that were associated with that. And so I just never went back. I never saw those people. I never went to those places. And, you know, I didn't really see them. They weren't part of my life. With alcohol, we don't have that luxury. You know, it's a part of life in America. And so, you know, we have to learn to coexist, you know, with it being around and still make different choices.
Yeah. Yeah. Makes a lot of sense. Let's talk first about your military career and, you know, how that kind of shaped you, your personality. You were in combat. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah. So I grew up in Jacksonville, Florida. I went to West Point for college. So I went to college first and then I went in, you know, as a second lieutenant in the Army. And, you know, it was 2003. I was at West Point during 9/11. And so, you know, everything kind of shifted from, you know, I was going to do 5 years of processing security clearances or whatever, and then get out of the Army to we were going to war. And so, you know, almost immediately after getting to my unit, we went to Afghanistan and then, you know, later Iraq. And I think, you know, for me, there were a few things from my experience that kind of shaped, you know, the struggles I would have later. And, you know, one of them was when we get into the Army, you know, we're 18 years old when we start, you know, I was starting in college, but it was a military college. And so, you know, you adopt the values of the military. You know, in the Army, it was loyalty, duty, respect, selfless service, honor, integrity, and personal courage. You know, I'll always remember those. And those kind of became my values. And we all wore the same things. And we all had the same haircuts. And we all kind of thought the same in a lot of ways. Different backgrounds, but, you know, they really do a good job of building camaraderie, which is useful when you're a part of that whole. But then when you get out, you kind of feel like you don't know who you are anymore. And so that was one of the things I struggled with. And, you know, another one was, you know, we don't ask for help a lot. You know, as leaders in the Army, you're taught to man up and to do what you have to do. And if that means running on a sprained ankle, you know, in formation, you do it, right? Because you don't want to admit weakness and you don't want to show any weakness. And so, you know, that was learning to ask for help, especially when it comes to mental health and, you know, substances. It's like, you know, as you mentioned in the intro, you really have to, you know, at some point you have to get help, and I needed help and I was afraid to ask. There are a few other things, but those were a couple of the big ones that really shaped my experience. I guess one more I will mention, you know, is just this state of hypervigilance. You know, so many veterans will sit in the back of a restaurant, you know, you're at Applebee's and you know where all the exits are and you know where everything is. And it's like, nothing's ever happened to me bad when I was at a fast casual restaurant, you know, I mean, and the cost to our body and our brain of kind of always feeling like we're on high alert takes a toll, and we've got to learn to come back from that. It took me a while.
Well, we'll get into the stress factor of that a little later on, because I know that this plays right into the addiction factor. But first, I want you to share your journey a little bit about, you know, overcoming the addiction, you know, and how this, you know, has really impacted you today.
Yeah. So, you know, I found myself struggling more and more as the years went on, you know, especially with alcohol. I think it can be a slow burn for a lot of people. You know, you don't develop an alcohol addiction overnight. Most people don't. Some people do, but most people don't. And so it just progressively gets worse. And so it's hard to say, oh, this is the moment when I have a problem and I need help, because you try things. You say, oh, well, I'm only going to drink on the weekends, or I'm only going to drink beer, or I'm only going to do this. Or, you know, in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous talks about that a lot. Like, we all go through that. And so for me, in 2018, it got really bad. And that was the point where I was really, you know, I was trying to decide if it was going to be my last day. You know, I was just done. And I didn't want to live like that anymore. And thankfully, I went to rehab. That was the route that I chose first. I liked rehab so much, I went back to rehab later that year, because I didn't work a program. And so, you know, a couple rounds of rehab. After the second time I picked up, I moved to Cambodia, somewhat of an addict's move to go all in like that. But I decided I needed to do meditation and yoga full time for 3 months. And I did. And it was awesome. Not everyone has the luxury of doing that, but it was really exactly what I needed, you know, to really build that foundation solid for me. You know, and since then I have had a relapse, right? And so I've had to deal with that. And what I realized is that I will always have to work a program. You know, I'll always have to go to 2 or 4 meetings a week. I'll always have to have a sponsor that I work with that I talk to a couple times a week. I'll always have to, you know, go to therapy if I feel like I need it, you know. And so there are all these things that I do in my life and these things that I have in place and these accountability measures that keep me sober. And I have to do those. And I think for me, you know, that a few years ago, that would have sounded daunting. But now I really look at it as I get to do those things. You know, most people, you know, that you meet in a grocery store are not devoting 4 or 5 weeks to being a better person, you know, to talking more kindly to friends and family, to showing up better, to working on their values and how they align or don't align, to getting rid of resentments. And so that constant work makes me better, you know, as a friend, as a partner, as an employer, as a human. And now I'm at the point where I'm just so thankful that I have to do that work.
I love that. Well, you know, in my world, life is chiefly service. And when you can find an organization, when you switch yourself around from a self-centered individual taking care of your own needs and not really caring about others that much, and you switch into a service-oriented organization, your life changes. It gets better and it gets better. And, you know, there's I like what you said a little earlier, you know, so many people try to bargain with addiction. I know when I was trying to quit, we had something called the Quit Club, right? So a bunch of us all wanted to quit, right? So we all went together. That lasted at least 2 weeks, you know?
Yeah.
And that was at the toward the end of my addiction. And you know, why try to reinvent the wheel?
Yeah, for sure. We come up with all sorts of creative ways, but for a lot of us, they don't work.
In the bargaining, you know. Well, yeah, you know, I'll just I could quit for a month, I can quit for a day, I can quit for a year. Yeah, sure, good, you know, good luck with that. Anyway, but you know, I think you made a valid point. You know, we're talking about a lifestyle change and a lifestyle going from, you know, old past behaviors that didn't work to behaviors that do work. Behaviors that you can now be proud of, that you can be in a place where you're growing, you're learning, you're evolving, you're becoming a better person. And, you know, as a result, your life gets better. You know, it's amazing the lower companions that is talked about, the big book that I definitely attracted into my world. And, you know, you think that that's reality at the time. It's just a bunch of delusion, a bunch of people all trying to pretend like they don't have a problem, too. And everybody hangs together, right?
You know, it's funny. I think when I first got sober, I remember I was going to brunch somewhere and it was kind of a, you know, a happening scene. And in my mind, back when I went to that same brunch, everyone was drinking. I thought everyone was drinking like I was drinking.
Yeah.
And I looked around and I realized most people were not drinking. And the people that were drinking weren't drinking like I drank. You know, people were getting up after a meal and leaving half of a mimosa sitting on the table. And I'm like, I would never have done that, you know? And so I started to realize that it really was the environment that I put myself in that was, or at least the perceived environment based on the people I was with.
Well, you know, we put different different eyes on. So if you have the eyes of an alcoholic, you see people drinking everywhere. If you have the eyes of a sober person, you notice what you just noticed. Okay,
yeah.
You know. So we have different eyes. You know, which dictates our world. And you know, I think one of the greatest downsides of alcohol and drugs is that you miss your life. And I'll tell you how you miss it. You miss it because you don't see the opportunities that are there. And even if you do see them, most of the time you'll mess them up anyway. Okay. Cause you got crazy thinking and it doesn't take much to get that craziness in going in your mind, you know. So it's important to know it, you know. It's important, you know. It is a disease of denial, 100%, right? So, you know, how do people break free of denial? Well, listen, we're going to answer that question when we get back from the break. We'll be right back.
Imagine this is your money and someone wants to take it from you. Who is it? The IRS. Guess what? They want your money and they can take it, all of it if they want. Remember, they sent you that letter right over here that said, hey, you owe us a bunch of cash and we're going to take it from you right now. So what do? You fight back by letting our team of experts work it out with the IRS so you can keep your money. And hey, we're good at what we do. When you hire us, you get a team of guys on your side that know the IRS laws, and we'll fight really hard to save your money. So, if you owe the IRS a ton of cash and you want to keep it, call right now and learn for free how we can help you put it back in your pocket. 5 minutes of your time right now can save you thousands of dollars. And the best part, it's a free call, so please call right now.
Hey, Ken D. Foster here, and I'll be right back with my guest in just a second. I want to let you know that we do have a YouTube channel out there, and it'd be great to subscribe. That way you can pass on these shows to people that you care about and love and get them the information that we're getting to you. So if you go to our, just go to youtube.com and put in at the Courage Network to get all of our shows, not only the Voices of Courage shows, but also the Heal It shows. That you can pass on to your family and friends. Okay, hope you check us out. So, you know, denial, you know, as some would say, it's not a river in Egypt. It's something we live with when you have the eyes of alcohol or drug addiction on. How do we get out of the denial, Nick?
I think it's tough, right? You know, in treatment, we always talk about the stages of change, right? And so we have this pre-contemplation. And so, you know, pre-contemplation is, you know, when you're maybe you're just starting to think about it, but you're like, oh, I'm not quite there yet. Contemplation, now you're thinking about it. And I think that's really where the denial starts to set in. We think about it, then we decide we're not. We think about it, we decide we're not. We look for these proof points that say we're not. Like, I didn't get too drunk on Friday night, so I don't have a problem anymore. But if you look at the totality of things, it's like, okay, over the last few years, you know, I've had it go bad more than it went good, right? Yeah. And so I think part of getting through denial can just really be, I'm going to take a black and white look at what's going on, right? Here are the people that have asked me if I had a problem or said, hey, maybe you should settle your drinking down a little bit. Like, it's a red flag. We're writing that down. We're going to say, okay, this is evidence for me having a problem. Evidence for. And what's the evidence against? And we look at it and we're like, We start to kind of trick our brain, right? We start to say, hey, brain, I'm not going to let you make this argument, you know, this plaintiff and defendant argument in your head, like you have a problem. No, you don't have a problem. I'm going to write it down and I'm going to kind of let myself look at it from a more objective third party. I find sometimes that's helpful. You know, starting to make commitments to people and seeing if you're able to keep those commitments. Reaching out and being explorative, right? So I don't know if I have a problem. Maybe I do. Maybe I don't. I don't think I do, but it's probably worth looking into because maybe it's not this healthy for me anymore. So let me, you know, go to one of these meetings people talk about and like talk to some other folks who have been through this, see what they think, get an experienced point of view. I think those are a few things that we can do to start to chip away at that denial a little bit. And I think the final thing is, you know, sometimes we make this black and white and we say, you're either an alcoholic or you're not an alcoholic. And for a lot of reasons, you mentioned stigma, but there's a lot of reasons why we don't necessarily want to do that at the beginning. We don't want to admit that. You're saying I can never drink again. I'm not ready to not ever drink again. Okay, let's lower the bar a little bit. Do you feel like this relationship with alcohol is healthy for you? Do you have a desire to stop drinking even a little bit? Okay, that's enough. You don't have to say I'm an alcoholic and I'm never drinking again on day one, because I think that's too much to ask for people. But, you know, we come in, we're looking at it, we're taking a fair look, and we're taking it one day at a time and see how it goes.
I like that. I think, you know, the other question I'd be asking is who is my drinking or drug use impacting? Who are the people is it impacting that I love? And I think, you know, I think that when you come from a place of compassion and start realizing that, you know, you might have somebody that you really love and you know, you're impacting their lives in a really negative way.
Yeah. And I think for so many years, I said my drinking the only person I hurt was me.
Yeah. You know, which is a lie. That's a lie. It's not true.
It's a lie. I told myself to feel better about it.
Yeah.
And it was like this, you know, ego thing on my end of saying, hey, look, I only hurt myself. Like, I'm not hurting anybody else. Well, my poor mom is worried about her son who's struggling with alcohol, and my friends and my employees and my customers and all these people that I could have done better for. And I think sometimes it's not until we start to do a little better that we realize how much we were underserving those people in our lives before when we were struggling.
100%. You know, alcoholism and drug addiction leave clues. Okay, they leave clues, and they leave clues if one is honest with themselves. One of the ways that I would suggest too is just rate yourself on a scale of 1 to 10. Okay, scale of 1, you know, 10 is outstanding, 1 is dismal. Right? How good are you at keeping commitments?
Mm-mm.
How good are you at being loving and nurturing? You know, how's your career right now? Scale of 1 to 10. How's your finances? Scale of 1 to 10. How is your relationships with your family? Scale of 1 to 10. You know, you just kind of look at the different areas of your life and just rate it, you know, and listen.
And I think our mental health is a big one to rate as well, right? Depression and anxiety, because, you know, for so long I told myself, I drink because I'm suffering from depression. I drink because I have this anxiety. I need to take the edge off. And then later it became more than an edge. But, you know, I was saying, oh, well, these things are because of this other thing. But the reality that I found out later was that it was this symbiotic relationship where I drank because I was depressed, and then I was more depressed because I drank, and then I needed to drink more because I was more depressed, then I became more depressed. So, you know, it's not good for our mental health, and it impacts it. And I have yet to see an alcoholic or someone struggling with substance use disorder that stops drinking and has worsening anxiety and depression. It always gets a little better.
Well, I'm sure some might, you know, initially, but very few.
Yeah, maybe scratch the first 30 or 90 days, but after that.
You know, when I was in therapy for about a year, you know, when prior to getting sober. And I was with this wonderful doctor, and, you know, all of a sudden I started hearing this little voice. It said, you got to feel the pain to make the change. Now, listen, I didn't want to feel any pain. I was already in pain. I was estranged from my wife and my children, on my finances, making tons of money and spending every dime. I was in a place where my health was, you know, I hadn't worked out in years. You know, I haven't read a book in years, right? You know, I was just in a place where I just wanted to feel no pain. I wanted to be liberated, right? I had no discipline, right? And the doc says, well, Ken, you know what? I've been working with you for a year. I can't work with you anymore. You need to go follow that voice. And as I walked out of his office, he could have said a lot of things to me. He could have been taking my money for another couple of years. I walked out and I thought, what is that voice? I said, you know what? I think that's the voice of truth. I think that's the voice of courage. And then I asked myself, what's the most painful thing that I don't want to do? And it was make that phone call to AA. So I made that phone call that day, that night, and walked into a meeting that night. And a big guy by the name of Jim said, welcome home.
I love it. I love it. Everybody's got a Jim.
Yeah, everybody got a Jim, man. Jim, yeah, I'll never forget that hug he gave me. Never, you know. And I just, like, you know, I think I cried when that happened. I was just like, I felt home. I was home.
And I think that pain, you know, the concern, we have so many of these concerns about this pain, and we don't want to feel any more pain. And, like, the alcohol and drugs are great at eliminating pain. The problem is they're so short acting, you know, and they eliminate pain for a very short amount of time, and then they generate more pain. And so, you know, it's, we've got to go through that initial stage of where, you know, we don't necessarily have our favorite coping skill anymore, you know, while we develop new ones, and it can be painful. But I think that the, I would say my overall pain level is way down from what it used to be. So,
Well, you know what happens is that, and I've heard this from many psychiatrists and people that treated addicts over the years, and I've realized it in my own life, is whatever age you were when you started depending on alcohol or drugs, that's pretty much your emotional age. And I know for me that was really accurate. And you know, I'd lose a pencil and get pissed off, you know. So it was that experience. And for me, I just said, well, you know what? It doesn't matter what I do to get through that, you know, that first initial stage. So I'd never drank coffee in my life. I started drinking some coffee to get me through. I wasn't a big sugar person, but I guess the alcohol had enough sugar in it. I needed to replace that, you know. And I, over the first year, I think I blew up about 50 pounds heavier than I'd ever been in my life, you know, but it didn't matter because I knew one thing. I was not going to drink or drug anymore. That was my deal. Right. And of course, eventually all the weight came off and all that. And, you know, I'm an athlete over the last 20 years. But you do whatever it takes. And it's interesting. And the reason I think that we need support is this. I didn't have any willpower when I walked into recovery. It would have been gone. It's just gone. Right. And I think that a lot of people don't get that. We don't have our willpower is one of the first things that goes when you're addicted. So you may think you got willpower, but you know, it's very minimal. I mean, you can still pick your arm up and shit, you know, but that's about it. You know,
you can be, I think this is part of the blame and the stigma too, you know, people that haven't been here.
Yeah.
You know, they don't really understand. And I think that, yes, we made the choice to drink or drug, you know, at some point in our lives. And at some point, the power of choice was taken away from us. We didn't have that choice anymore. My car would autopilot to the liquor store. I swear I didn't drive that car there. It went there on its own.
Yeah.
Right. And so no matter how much I wanted to be successful, you know, I could be successful 23 hours of the day, 23 hours and 45 minutes of the day. If during 15 minutes, my brain convinced me that this was a good idea, the next 3 days are gone, right? The next 6 months are gone. And so, you know, it's okay that we don't have the power to make that choice when we're there. Later, we'll have the power. Like once we get some time in sobriety, once we start to learn some tools and skills, once we work a program, now I've got complete control over whether or not I pick up that first drink. I will tell you, I probably don't have control over whether or not I have a second one if I do that, but the first one I can control now, but I needed help to get there.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I'll say this too. I just had a guest on one of my other shows and we're talking about the statistics. She's a doctor, DC, statistics around the opioids. And right now the science says that 30% of the people that take an opioid, right? Just one pill, become addicted. 30%. It's very high. Very, very high.
And so, I think it's important to note that those 70% of people that didn't become addicted, they didn't have more willpower than the 30%.
Right.
Maybe some of them did. Yeah. But for the most part, they just didn't have the gene, right? They just got lucky, right? You know, and so that 30%, you know, that bucket that I fall into, well, we got to do a little more work, and that's okay.
Yeah, a little more work, that's okay. All right, listen, I got to take a quick break. When we come back, let's talk about, I want to go back into the military side of this, you know, and how empathy plays a role in, especially when you're working with veterans that have addiction. So we'll discuss that when we come back.
Yeah. Hi, everyone watching at home. We're here to remind you that if you or someone you know were injured in an accident that was not your fault, listen up. We have live agents available right now to answer your questions and tell you how much your case is potentially worth. Hi, I'm Gina Belich, here with spokesman and TV personality Tom Mustin with us in the Help Center. So, Tom, phones are really busy over there. Tell us what kind of calls you're seeing.
Well, Gina, first off, thank you for having me here in the call center with you. We always enjoy talking to the viewers and getting folks the compensation that they deserve. You know, we're seeing calls about all kinds of accidents, but the most common by far has been car accidents. So if you or someone you know were injured in an accident that was not your fault, give us a call right now. You'll speak with a live person. They'll answer any questions you have and tell you if you have a case and how much your case is potentially worth.
Thanks, Tom. All right, folks at home, you heard it. Take advantage of this opportunity and call now.
Hey, Kendi Foster here. I'll be right back with my guest in just a second, but I did want to mention that right now my latest book is on sale, The Courage to Change Everything, Daily Strategies and Essential Wisdom to Awaken Your Inner Genius. One thing that I found out is we don't need wisdom or courage now and then. We need it every single day. We want to live a vital, healthy, amazing life. And this book is filled with the wisdoms of the ages and daily steps for you to take every day to be able to create more joy, more happiness, more wealth in your life. So I hope you'll check it out. CourageToChange.us. Thanks. All right, Nick. All right, empathy. Let's talk about empathy. How does empathy play in, especially working with the veterans during the recovery process?
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, it can be frustrating whether you're a family member or a loved one or, you know, even a treatment provider when someone just keeps doing the wrong thing, right? Like what you see is the wrong thing, whether that's, you know, as simple as like continuing to use or drink or like not wanting to work a program or not surrendering, it can be incredibly frustrating, right? And so I think it's so important, you know, for us to remember that like we haven't been in their shoes, you know, in some ways I have, which is nice. I kind of have a little easier road to empathy because I've been there, right? So I can empathize a little easier than I think some people. But even with me, I think it's important to like remind ourselves this person is like facing a battle, you know, and it's a hard battle and we don't know what they've been through and we don't know what they've seen. And so, you know, always assuming positive intent and assuming that people want to get well. And for them, for whatever reason, it's really hard right now. And we're going to keep hope. I think that's, you know, what I always tell myself and our team.
Yeah. You know, it's in combat. You know, people see things that maybe they never should have seen. You know, there's trauma, there's drama, there's just, you know, war is ugly. And, you know, and to come back from that and try to reintegrate into a society where most of the people are kind of in delusion, you know, they've never been through anything like that. You know, and to be able to come back and be able to reestablish some form of mental health. I think a lot of vets self-medicate, you know, a lot of people self-medicate, whether you're a vet or not, but you're self-medicating and you're trying to fix something. You're trying to get rid of something that you feel like you'll never be able to get rid of. And, you know, when we deal with trauma, I know this is that when you work those steps, you might not get rid of the memory, but you'll get rid of the feeling in the memory.
Yeah.
The emotion will transform. It'll leave your energetic field. Okay. And so you'll have a memory, but it's not the feeling. It's not that same thing, but it just takes time.
It does. You know, we always say time takes time, right?
Yeah.
And so, you know, I think that's from both the person who's struggling and from the perspective of the loved one. You know, sometimes it can take them time as well, but then acknowledging that it might take this person some time, right? You know, and we don't want to enable, right? We don't want to, you know, if someone, you know, even as someone who struggled, like, I don't want people to enable me. It doesn't help if I'm in active addiction. But then when we're working on it, when we are doing the right things, when we're taking steps in the right direction, it's just so important to encourage them and to like remember that empathy, and then also notice the things that are moving in the right direction. Because if we are moving in the right direction, then there's hope. And, you know, so many of us do get well.
Yeah, they get well. And when you get well, you know, there's still adversity. There's still challenges. There's still people that like you or don't like you. There's still, hell, the money's there today. The money's gone tomorrow. You know, there's lots of stuff that happens out in the world. You lose family members. You lose friends. You know, the world is kind of built that way. And, you know, how do you now, okay, that through your sobriety and through where you are, you know, and what you teach, how do you overcome adversity and how do you create success? You know what?
So I have an analogy that I like for this, and it deals with the ocean. So, you know, when I was in active addiction, I was like, you drop me in the middle of the ocean and there's waves and stuff. And so I'm drowning and I somehow managed to get up just enough to get a breath to stay alive. That was my life in active addiction. When I got into recovery, it was like somebody granted me a pair of floaties, right? I had floaties, my tools. I got some new tools here. Now I can stay above the water some of the time and I can breathe a little easier. Well, as we continue to get time and work a program, we're upgrading that vessel. Right. So now I've got a canoe. Now I've got a boat. Now I've got a bigger boat. And so waves are still going to come. All these bad things in our life are still going to come. But as I continue to grow and build these tools, I have like a bigger vessel that I can take more. I can take more waves. And I think I have a pretty big boat now. Now that boat is contingent upon me working every day. Right. I can downgrade the boat just as easily. You know, and there might be times when I need to call somebody else in because the wave is too big and I can't handle it. But, you know, I recently, you know, in the last few months, I had, an event in my personal life that, you know, my fiance was struggling with. I had a business event that was big, and they were big waves in my life. And like, I had a lot of emotions and feelings, and I also felt strong. I also felt like I was well positioned to handle them. So it didn't eliminate the negative things in my life or like the challenges that I was going to face. But what it did was it improved my ability to deal with it, you know? And so did I take a withdrawal from my, you know, spiritual bank account during those difficult times? Maybe a little bit, but I don't think it was too big. And then when they all settled the way, you know, they were all fine, everything was okay. And so now I get back to work and prepare for the next thing that life's going to throw at me. What's the quote? You know, pain is, you're always going to have pain, but you don't have to have suffering. And I felt like I had some pain, but at no point did I feel like I was suffering. Like a minor inconvenience I would have suffered for before. Now I have big things and I still don't suffer. No, I feel the pain.
That's good. Yeah. Well, you know, I still live by that philosophy, feel the pain to make the change. Okay. What it is, but I don't suffer either. I don't like the suffering part of that. Yeah. Yeah. You know, and by the way, you know, suffering, of course, you know, as we mature, we realize that suffering is self brought. Okay. We bring our own suffering. We bring our own misery in our world. It's not somebody else. Even though it looks like sometimes somebody is, you know, says something to you or does something that you don't like, that's, you're going to be miserable and suffering. It's your choice. You, nobody can force us to be happy if we choose to be unhappy, and nobody can force us to be unhappy if we choose to be happy. Nobody can. It's an inside job. So,
and for me, like having some mindfulness was so important. Like just being honest with myself at all times about where I am and what I can handle, you know, and what I can't handle. And so when something bad happens, if I realize I can't handle it, I've got a list of people I can call and say, hey, I can't handle this right now. I need your support. Right. So no matter how strong I am, you know, there may come things I can't do alone.
Well, you know, we last decade was the kind of the me generation, all about me.com. And quite frankly, this decade, as people continue to share with me, it's a decade of collaboration. We collaborate with one another. We get the support we need from one another. We love one another. We're in a different space. Okay. So if you're not in that space, you're still in the allaboutme.com. It's time to get in the new space, because that's where we're all going. Okay. And I got to take a quick break and we'll be right back. And when we get back, I want to talk about your recovery center, Sophros Recovery, and talk a little bit about that and where people can get a hold of you and reach out to you. So we'll be right back.
Hi, folks. Joe Namath here. Did you know that I wear hearing aids? I love my hearing aids, and I am here to help you get a deal on the same brand I wear.
Don't waste thousands on expensive hearing aids when you can get MD Hearing's revolutionary Neo hearing aids for just $297 a pair. The Neo is a true hearing aid, not an amplifier. With rechargeable technology many customers say is superior to more expensive models. And you can get two Neo hearing aids with a 45-day risk-free trial, free shipping, and free lifetime U.S.-based support for only $297. The Neo is nearly invisible with its tiny in-the-ear canal design.
Call my friends at MD Hearing and get the over-the-counter hearing aids that I use for you.
Call now and get not one, but two Neo hearing aids for just $297.
800-789-7885. Again, that's 800-789-7885.
Welcome back, everybody. This is your host, Ken D. Foster. I'm speaking with Nick Podlow. I got it right this time. He's the founder of Sophros Recovery, an addiction treatment facility, and he's here to tell us a little bit about that facility. Nick, tell me a little bit about it. Why the name, first of all? Where'd the name come from, and what do you guys do over there?
Yeah, so when in Greek mythology, when Pandora's box was opened, you know, we know about all the evil spirits that were released, right? Don't open Pandora's box. Well, one of the lesser known things was that when Pandora's box was opened, there was a spirit of sophrosyny that was released that allowed us to have judgment and prudence in light of all the evils in the world. And so I just took sophrosyny and shortened it to Sophros. But I think it's a nice little allegory for what we do, you know, in treatment.
So even in the dark, there's light.
Exactly. Yep.
Yeah.
And so what we do is we provide addiction and mental health treatment. You know, we do it at what's called the PHP and IOP level, which basically what that means is it's not inpatient rehab. Some people come to us directly. Some people come to us after they step down from inpatient. And what you're doing is you're with us 3 to 6 hours a day, developing a set of tools and skills to be successful in recovery. And, you know, I believe strongly that the tool that we need depends on where we're at. You know, if you just had a hammer, it'd be hard to build a house because you're going to need a screwdriver. You're going to need a, you know, level. You're going to need all sorts of things, a drill. And so we need to develop some different tools for when life throws different stuff at us, whether that's like reframing thoughts and actions, whether it's mindfulness, whether it's relationships, emotions, trauma. There's a whole bunch of things that we need to build, most of which we were never taught before. And so that's our goal, is to, you know, help people get the tools to be successful and heal.
So they can go to SophrosRecoveryTampa.com. Is that correct?
Yeah, Tampa.com or without the Tampa. Either one leads to us. We've got a Jacksonville and a Tampa location. And then anyone in the state of Florida, we can help as well through our virtual program.
Okay, great. I'm not sure we spelled that right. We didn't spell that right. So Sophros Recovery, Tampa.com, or just SophrosRecovery.com. Is that correct?
Yeah. And I always say, you know, if you don't live in a place that we cover, if you're not in the state of Florida and you need help, reach out. We'll still help. We'll still find the right place for you. Yeah. You know, we're here to help people, and you know, it's it doesn't matter to me. So if anybody is struggling, they can always reach out, and we're not gonna hang up the phone on you.
Well, you know, it was kind of full circle. You know, I told you my story today. You know, got to feel the pain to make the change. So, you know, maybe right now is a good time to pick up, go to the website, and then make a phone call. And at least that's your journey. That's your start, you know. And nobody's going to hang up on you. Nobody's going to get angry with you. Nobody's going to tell you that you're less than you are. They're all there to love you and care for you and help you take it to the next level. Yeah. So, all right, man, what a great show, Nick. Thank you so much for joining me today. I really appreciate everything you're doing, and you know, keep up the amazing work, man. You're really helping save a lot of people's lives out there.
I appreciate it, Ken. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, thanks again so much. Hope you come back.
Yeah, I would love to.
Okay. All right. All of you, I want to thank you for joining us today, and be sure to continue to see the unseeable, know the unknowable, and you'll be able to do the impossible. Pass this show on to those that you love. Take care.